being planted into this community. This is one of the older Mexican neighborhoods in Los Angeles. It goes back probably to the late 19th century. And where it's located is in Elysian Park, kind of north of downtown LA and a little bit east, I guess, of Lincoln Heights. It was, I think, always a neglected community until the 50s. It was a community that lived without, for example, without sanitation services, without paved streets. And it was always a kind of a thing that, that there was just a tendency to neglect this neighborhood, to ignore it, until the mid-1940s, when people began, residents of the neighborhood began to start organizing. And they began to start organizing to demand sanitation services, to have their trash picked up, to have streets put in, to have bus service coming into that area. And so what we see, if you go back and you look at the history of Chavez Ravine, is that even as early as the mid-40s, early 40s, there seems to be developing a tradition of political activism and community organization, even just among residents. In the late 1940s, and I think this probably had something to do with the fact that the community was demanding improved conditions, and I think the city didn't want to deal with it, was that the city came up with a plan for Chavez Ravine, and the plan was to break it all down and renovate it with public housing. And they were telling people that they were going to provide them with new homes. They were going to knock down their old homes and put them into public housing. People didn't want to lose their homes. They were homes that had been built individually by people, that they had bought the land. The families had lived in the homes for several generations. And so, again, there was a resistance to this new plan to create public housing. That plan never really worked out. What happened is time went by. By the mid-1950s, the city was beginning to negotiate with the Brooklyn Dodgers, who wanted to come to L.A., and they began to talk about the possibility of selling them a lot of land to build their stadium. And again, the community reacted to this. They didn't want public housing. What they wanted was to continue to live in that area with the same kinds of services that other communities had been given. But the interests that were behind bringing Dodger Stadium into Elysian Park, and particularly Chavez Ravine, I think were very strong interests. Among them, I think the Los Angeles Times was one of the biggest advocates. When you look at urban renewal, basically who was behind that were big business interests who were thinking more in terms of developing freeways to allow suburban neighborhoods, which were also being developed at that time, easier access to their stores, this type of thing. They use public domain laws to literally take the land away from these families that own their property and sell it to the Dodger Stadium, and it involved something like 300 acres of land, and it was taken directly from families who resisted all the way. Once the land was given to this new ball team that was going to come in, they began construction of the ballpark itself, and there was still protests in City Hall. This is the construction and the sale began around 1957. By 1959, they were people still dug in and entrenched in the community. They didn't want to leave, yet the city was forcing them to leave. And the Arechiga family, which was one of the last families to leave and probably one of the most strongest opponents of against their forced eviction, had to be physically removed by the Los Angeles sheriffs. And I think that's what this scene is here. You have a very evil-looking sheriff who's got this woman in his grip, and she's still protesting about the loss of her home. And that's where the scene of this particular subject matter ends, with the removal of that family.
I do feel that what we are dealing with in our society is cultural domination.
Max Benavides, a writer, journalist, and director of the California Chicano Mural Documentation Project.
It means that certain forces and institutions in our society attempt to influence our consciousness, and that these forces and institutions are dominated by certain interests. And I believe this is true. And these interests, whether it be big government, media corporations, or international financial groups, try to control the decisive determinants of our outlook and the nature and direction of our goals in our lives. I believe that the 50s, and I'd like to quote what Rudy Acuna said in his book Occupied America, is that it was a decade of defense. We were all on the defensive. We were suppressed, repressed, and oppressed. Gays, leftists, minorities, and women. Certain people are denied or literally blanked out of history, out of the record. And that's what I think this one section of the mural, the 50s, as well as all the other parts, but I'd like to center in on the 50s, is doing. It's trying to uncover a true history, something that actually did occur, the struggles as they did occur, the people who were involved, the people that are usually blanked out or denied or just excluded from the record. I think that this section on the 50s tells us about people and struggles and events that a lot of people in our society would like to ignore. It's my opinion that we can't ignore it, that it is part of our history and it's a legacy for all of us.
When you walk down the bike trail and you take a look at it, what you're seeing is the visible product. You're seeing only the tip of the iceberg of the whole project.
Judy Baca, creator and artistic director of the Great Wall of Los Angeles.
One of the things that's really important, I think, about the Great Wall is the interest we have in creating images that are images of truth, that are actually the truth about the history, but also the truth with a special emphasis on people who were really courageous, who managed to overcome the kinds of difficulties that are sort of common, the kind of unsung heroes, I think are real important in terms of providing role models, not only for the kids, but also for us as we struggle through a period of time, which is an increasingly difficult time to do this work.
The Writing on the Wall was produced by Helene Rosenbluth and Carol Dix. This program was made possible by a grant from the California Council on the Humanities. The Great Wall is located in the Tujunga Wash in North Hollywood. To obtain more information, contact the Social and Public Arts Resources Center, SPARC, in Los Angeles at area code 213-822-9560. In Los Angeles, I'm Helene Rosenbluth.